This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
This is one slogan that really seems to fit.
GE, imagination at work.
Because GE may no longer be imagining up home appliances.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon. Liz Taylor and her husbands, Mariah Carey and that Sony guy, Simon and Garfunkel, Bruce Willis and his hair, they could all have something in common soon with GE and its appliance business, Splitsville. The Wall Street Journal reports plans to auction the unit could bring GE between $5 and $8 billion. The world's biggest conglomerate has been under some pressure to trim down and simplify its operations, and Ashley Milne-Tite reports the appliance business may be a likely place to start.
GE raked in $173 billion in revenue last year. Its appliance division accounted for about 4% of that. Brand consultant Robert Pasikoff says GE may have been a pioneer in the appliance market, but these days it has plenty of competition. He says the brand doesn't have the clout it once did.
There isn't a modern consumer out there that's going to tell you GE was the one that first combined the washer and dryer. That was a big deal 50 years ago. But now you just expect to be able to get a washer-dryer at whatever appliance store you walk into.
He says consumers expect products to work and to be well-priced, and most brands meet those criteria. He says whoever buys GE's appliance unit will keep using the GE name for a couple of years, then sell the products under its own brand. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
The nation's industrial output was way down last month, more than double the drop that economists had generally expected. There were big cutbacks at auto plants and in other manufacturing industries. Well, given that unsettling news, Wall Street may need to manufacture some inspiration this morning. The Dow has stumbled out of the gate down 38 points, a quarter of 1%. The Nasdaq is off 2 points, a tenth of 1%. The S&P 500 down a tiny fraction of a percent. An incredible number out of Myanmar this morning. The Red Cross is now estimating the cyclone death toll to be as high as 128,000. That's a much larger figure than the government tally. Lisa Cho reports heavy rains from another approaching storm are disrupting what's already been a recovery nightmare.
It's already been a logistical nightmare, but it could get worse. More rain creates all sorts of problems for delivering food. Marcus Pryor has seen it before. He is spokesman for the World Food Program in Bangkok.
Even offloading supplies off planes at the airport becomes more difficult. There are obviously certain supplies that need to stay dry, particularly when it comes to food. We have to hope that the weather does not become another huge obstacle to the relief effort.
Pryor says two World Food Program logistical experts received visas and flew to Yangon this morning. They'll join a team of more than 200 people on the ground trying to ramp up the food operation. So far, the UN agency has sent more than 700 tons of rice, beans, and high-energy biscuits to Myanmar. That's just enough to feed 100,000 people a first ration. But that's not enough considering that up to 2.5 million people may have been displaced by the storm. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
Global financial markets have turned into a monster. That's according to the German president. He blames bankers for what he calls a massive destruction of assets, and he wants tougher regulations. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more.
President Köhler was once a spokesman for the banking industry, but he doesn't mince his words about bankers. He says they've created a monster by using complex financial products and betting with large amounts of borrowed money. Köhler says what he calls excessive bankers' pay caused the subprime crisis. The remarks reflect a widespread discontent in Germany, says Bertrand Benoit of the Financial Times. While the German economy has boomed and bankers have prospered, most ordinary workers have not.
There's a bit of resentment from a population that sees its economy doing so well and at the same time feels at least that it's not getting much benefit from it. And so there's a bit of resentment with bankers.
Köhler's call for controls over bankers' pay was echoed yesterday in a meeting of European finance ministers. They described excessive remuneration as scandalous. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, May 15th on marketplace.org. We've had Paris Hilton mucking stables, families swapping moms, D-list celebrities dropping hundreds of pounds, and Flava Flav meeting the parents. Today, Fox unveils the latest reality offering, Secret Millionaire. And it's all about living the low life, emphasis on the low. Stacey Vanek-Smith reports.
It's a fantasy as old as business itself, walking in somebody else's socioeconomic shoes. And now, like everything else, it's the concept for a reality show. Secret Millionaire got its start in England.
Terry George is leaving behind his designer clothes, mansion in the country, and his husband to go undercover in Cornwall.
The riches to rags experience will end with the millionaire giving out at least $100,000 of his own money to the low-income folks he has lived with for a week. Brian Lowry is the TV critic for Variety. He says all of the networks are getting into the feel-good reality game.
Extreme Makeover Home Edition is sort of the Cadillac of that genre right now, and the fact that that continues to do well, people are going to keep copying it.
But Feel Good doesn't necessarily make for good ratings. Oprah's Big Give had a lackluster finish. Three Wishes and The Benefactor flopped. But Lowry says the networks don't mind taking risks with reality because the shows are fast and cheap to produce. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Americans are still the world's greatest overachievers. The annual World Competitiveness Rankings were released today. The U.S. tops the list for the 15th straight year. Silver and bronze medals go to Singapore and Hong Kong, respectively. And then there are the Brits. They're not even in the top 10. Well, it happens to be Brit Week here in L.A. The idea is to let Californians know just how important England is to the state's economy. We sent Cash Peters to check in with his countrymen.
Brit Week's an annual event in L.A. Annual in the sense that it started last year and now they're having another one. British Consul General Bob Pearce.
It's part celebration, it's part marketing.
Like 90% marketing.
Well, that's how we justify doing it, yes.
Yeah, but it's a great idea, though. The United Kingdom is a huge investor in California through companies such as BP, Vodafone, plus a bunch of shops they want you to visit.
We have 24 different British retailers, famous brands, participating in a Brit Walk.
It's true. They have a leaflet. The first store I went to was Coco de Mer. And what could be more British sounding than that?
We sell lingerie and accoutrements.
Well, what kind of accoutrements?
Sex toys.
Uh-oh. Next. Well, you know, this is public radio. I went to the English Laundry, a British clothes store selling shirts with cutting-edge designs on them. Manager Michelle Donati.
Look at this one. It's beautiful.
And what makes it British?
It's just the design, the inspiration.
It actually looks like a snail covered in ink crawled all over it.
Of course, it's all very well roping stores into this great ballyhoo. Question is the Brit Walk actually attracting American customers?
It's fun, you know?
But it's working, is it?
No.
No. How many people are on the Brit Walk?
Actually, I don't know yet. I don't know when
it's
actually
zero, isn't
zero.
It? Nobody has got this leaflet. Nobody knows it's on.
Not yet.
People can go from one British store to another. Some of them will be offering attractions, glass of champagne, whatever it may be, in their stores.
So I'm going to get champagne in every store I go to.
It's up to the individual stores what they do.
So where's my champagne and cookies and stuff?
Well, we don't give out champagne and cookies.
It's to welcome me as a Brit.
No, absolutely, but right now we're short of champagne.
That's so British. But behind all this is a serious message.
The truth about the UK that we really need to get across is that this is the most important business relationship that California has.
It is. Thanks, Bob.
We're bold, we're bright, and we're British.
Yes, we are. In Los Angeles, I'm Cash Peters for Marketplace.
There's an old saying that goes something like this. A recession is when you lose your job. A depression's when I lose mine. Think about that when the latest numbers on unemployment claims come out this morning. Economists are generally forecasting a modest rise, but whether job cutbacks are modest depends very much on your perspective. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell has been taking a closer look at specific trends. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
You know, the last job report gave us something of a relief on the job front, but we still had 20,000 jobs lost. And with Wall Street and the rest of us wondering if this is going to be a short and shallow recession or a deep and vicious one, what do these numbers tell us?
Well, what the numbers so far tell us is that the downturn will be short and shallow, assuming that we continue to lose jobs in the sort of 75,000 to 100,000 range. That typically defines a short, shallow recession. But, you know, it's not just the raw numbers, Bob. It's who is getting laid off that can have a big impact. But just to give you some numbers here, if you look at less than a high school diploma, for example, manufacturing, construction, the unemployment rate went from 7.6% to 7.8%. Now, let me give you one more number.
I'm following this.
Bachelor's degree or higher, same time frame. December 2007, unemployment rate, 2.2%. April, 2.1%.
And what's the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that that's where most of the job growth has really occurred. In fact, it's stunning how much of the job growth over the past decade has come out of the health services area. So one way that you could look at this downturn is to say, so long as the health services continues to grow and so long as education continues to hold up, then our better educated workers are going to continue to have jobs that will somewhat limit the impact of the downturn. But this is a blue-collar and pink-collar recession.
Doesn't make it any easier for whoever it is who's losing their job, though.
Absolutely not, and do not want to minimize that. Losing your job is terrible. I think this is one of the times where the consensus is right among economists, where, you know what, when we come out of this downturn, it's going to be slow. It's not going to be a lot of job growth. If you lose your job, it's going to be hard to get another one. And that, for most of us, that's the definition of a recession.
I can only say I hope you're wrong, Chris. Our economics editor, Chris Farrell, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
And I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. You know, you can replay any of our programs at marketplace.org. We're glad you could make us part of your morning.
American Public Media.